business goals. Tick. A vision board. Tick. You're all set, but have you made yourself accountable? When the going gets tough, it can be hard to stick to your goals. So what are you going to do now to help get the sticking power you need to see them through? Having a supportive group in your corner is essential in business. That's why I've started the Creative Slurp Accountability Club to help small business owners like you keep on track with your goals. We check in once a month to make sure we're all on track and bounce ideas around so you never feel alone again in your small business. And I take you through a monthly review and goal setting session to give you a framework to work from. It could be the support you need to take you to the next level. At the moment, it's just £15 a month to join, and you can sign up by going to my website, thevictoriabrown.com. That's thevictoriabrown.com, and click on Join Accountability Club. See you there. Have you ever wondered how to make your business stand out from the crowd, but still do what you love? Well, if so, you'll love this episode's guest. Lucy Sheridan created her business, Rubbish Portraits, because she wanted to create some consistent income from being an artist. So she created a portrait booth for where she draws guests in just 3 minutes at events. As well as giving people a fun and easy way to pay for her artwork, it's also worked as a brilliant marketing tool, creating a memorable brand around her. In this episode, find out Lucy's top tips for making it as an artist and why she'd never give up her mundane admin job. Enjoy. Welcome to Creative Slurp Podcast, giving you the juice to build a successful creative business with me, Victoria Brown, a creative business advisor, former jeweler and craft fanatic. Now you're in the right place if you want to find real talk, inspiration and the best tips and strategies for your handmade business without the overwhelm. We're all about making business exciting and fun. Now buckle up and let's get started. Hi Lucy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I found you on Instagram, I think, when I found out about your business, Rubbish Portraits, which absolutely fascinated me. And and I just wanted to find out more. So I'm really pleased that you can come on and talk to us about your creative business and how you make it work for you. Can you just tell us a little bit about you and your business for people that haven't heard about you?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me, Victoria. Rubbish Portraits is looks and feels just like a photo booth, same sort of dimensions, but it's an analog version. So when you jump inside it and sit down, there's me and I sit and draw you in 3 minutes. We have a conversation and then I post out the portraits to you from the exit hole of a, you know, just like a photo booth. And then you walk away with yourself immortalized. They do tend to look like the people I draw in actual fact. So I don't know how that happens, but it does. So no, it goes down a real treat.
Amazing. And yeah. I just love that idea. How did you come up with that idea? Because it's not the first thing that comes to mind. Obviously photo booths are quite instant, whereas drawing normally takes quite a long time.
Yeah. When I was in Bristol, I used to be part of a cooperative and we were screen printers and illustrators mainly. It was called Snap. And we'd go to art fairs and a couple of us felt really awkward standing there and selling the art that was behind you. So we picked up this little defense mechanism of drawing each other and looking busy or something. You know, we called them rubbish portraits. So we didn't do it too much or anything. It wasn't a standardized thing, but that stuck in my head. And then I'd not long had my daughter, she's 10 soon, and the Affordable Art Fair came to Bristol and they had a no-show gallery, in fact, so which meant they had a big white empty space and they needed something to go on. So because I'd exhibited with them for a number of years, they said, could you do something live inside? And I, you know, didn't had like baby brain at that point. I don't know. Maybe should I screen print live? And thinking that's been done 1,000 times. And then my friend Katie said, why don't you do your rubbish portraits? I thought, oh, brilliant, because that just doesn't take much headspace. So I lined the walls of this space with lining paper and I was up a ladder and down low and I was drawing people, the punters that came to the fair. So I encouraged people to take pictures of it and to hashtag their portrait on Instagram to try and get a bit of a presence. And it just went down really, really well. So by the end of it, there was just all this wallpaper of random people, which I never actually collected. It all just went in the bin. One of the creators said that was such a shame, but it wasn't. No point in driving to London to get all this wallpaper. Anyway, so it was a number of years later, really, that I thought to myself, that was a really good stint. I really liked that. Could I package it better? But yeah, you know what it's like when you've got other things going on. It really did take me some years. But then when I run with an idea, I think, right, I'm doing it. It happens. I'm quite impatient like that. So before I knew it, and I had a lot of gumption, you know, I designed a booth. I designed a logo. I'm not a marketeer. I had no idea how I was going to, but, you know, Instagram does a lot for you, or did. And here I am. So I'm busy with live events, mainly weddings, because that's where I'm marketing myself to. And it's absolutely brilliant. And you know what? They've got better and better over the years. The drawing.
Well, you know, you said you weren't a marketeer. Well, no artists really are marketeers, are they? When they start out, they have to kind of take those first steps. So how did you take those first steps? And, you know, how did you get that first client? How did you just, you know, who was it? How did you find them?
Gosh, I don't know what happened. So I launched it back at the Affordable Art Fair in Hampstead this time. So I was in their main foyer and I was charging per portrait. And you couldn't miss me because you had to put your coat there, get your tickets there, and then come and have your portrait. So that couldn't have been more successful for me. So, you know, I'd built that booth, it was live and it was going really well. And then actually the first person who got into that booth was Mark, is the owner of Cass Art. He was literally the first person, and he said, love this. And I thought, oh my God, that's an amazing compliment. You know, he's looking after so many artists, and his shop in Hampstead was down the road, and I'm always looking for compliments, only being human. And I thought, oh, well, if he likes it. And so I can't remember what the next gig went on to do then, but I was contacting people thinking, what events are going on, like Henley Festival, not the regatta, the craft festival. Yeah, I really kind of, big events, I thought, who could take me on? And, you know, good to people who didn't get back to me, but whoever, you know, did get to me went, this sounds awesome, this is really different, yes, we'd like that at our event, Lucy. So yeah, it was a bit of me really just throwing myself to people. I went as far as Ireland on that first year to the Electric Picnic. That came about because I'd got somewhere in my SEO, not that I know at all what that even means. It was exhausting that first year because I did try and say hello to lots of people, and before I knew it, I had quite a jam pack. But so now I've sort of fine-tuned it a lot more. You know, I can plan my year, and with weddings, they are, you know, very organized before.
Handy.
Turns out not that rubbish. Yeah. So I really like the structure that I've got now. I've never been able to plan, you know, financially my creative year at all. But the fact that I know I've got so many weddings or events in 2023 and 2024 is just, you know, gives me so much calmness, really, in my, you know, I don't worry about, it's always been a bit hand to mouth for me, being an artist, if I'm honest, so.
I think that's the genius of the idea, really, because you say you don't know anything about marketing, but inadvertently hit upon this amazing marketing strategy, really, because you've gone from being Lucy Sheridan, one of many artists out there, who is she, to Lucy Sheridan, she does this portrait booth thing, and that's something different for people to
talk
about.
She's a lady in the box. She's that lady in the box.
The lady in the box. And there's no other ladies in the box. you've kind of created this niche for yourself that people,
really,
you know,
have
a talking point, people could talk about to market you. And no doubt that will get more people looking at your artwork as well. And as you said, also create this income from mainly weddings, which again are easier to market to because you've got a set audience there who have got a budget and they're willing to spend money. So you almost got this kind of, like reliable income. So it's, you know, it's absolute genius. And
Thank you.
I just love it, and I love the story of it. I'm really fascinated if there's any funny, there must be so many funny stories from being in that booth, because people have been drinking, people are at weddings having a laugh, there must be some really funny things that happen when you're drawing people. Have you got any funny stories to share?
Probably can't remember any of them. But yeah, no, I did have, because a lot of people, you know, it's a little theatre really. My box is a curtain, and I say things like, well, first of all, I just want people to feel extremely comfortable when they sit down, you know, because it can be a little bit daunting maybe. But like you say, they've had a drink, so they're not worried. They haven't necessarily, but no, half the time people have just seen what someone's come out with, so they want to dive and get in. But I do say to people, you know, have you got any secrets? Because people think, oh, it's a bit like a confessions box, right? You know, you've got in and there's that proximity, but I'm there, and I just start drawing you straight away. There's no point in hanging around. Plus, we want to stick to that 3 minutes, right? Not that I've got an egg timer. But there's a lovely guy who came in. I was at the Barbican Centre and at a wedding, and he was a Catholic priest, and he was wearing his collar. We both were in hysterics, and he said, before I could, you know, I'm on the wrong side. Yeah, that made me laugh. I'd always been waiting for someone like that to come in. Oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, so he was a wedding guest, and lovely guy.
So is there a different vibe then when you're at a wedding compared to another event? Are people a bit more relaxed at weddings generally?
Yeah, I think people are relaxed everywhere, actually. And if they're not, they're probably nowhere near me. Because, it's really good fun. And people might stand and look. I don't know, really. I don't really know what goes on outside the booth. That's the unfortunate thing to it. I don't get that. There's all sorts of reactions that go on, which I would just love to capture. I will do one day. But I think as a person, I do make people feel quite relaxed. And, you know, something that I really try and achieve to do. And I want you to feel, you know, no judgment and laughing straight away. I mean, when you sit down, there's a sign in front of you that says no smiling. And that straight away gives people a talking point.
Why is it no smiling?
So it's no smiling because I can't draw teeth, and it changes your entire face shape when you smile. But also it's that joke on, you know, if you're popping into a passport photo, you're not allowed to smile.
Yeah. And what's people's reaction when they get their portrait?
Well, I used to just stick it out the exit hole, you know, the wet painted portrait. And so I wouldn't get to see that reaction. And then I was on a podcast with Mark Shaler, who'd done a bit of psychology, and he was like, that is really interesting, Lucy. Why are you doing that? You know, you're just you're getting rid, and you're not allowing that little thrill. And I actually just now hold it up and try and see their reaction. Yeah. it's just they smile straight away, because it's quite a nice thing to, you know, where do you get your portrait done? And unless you're part of the aristocracy and we sit down for 8 days in oil painting. Someone's paying you a little bit of attention. Kids love it because it's that looking at them. They don't want to chat as much as adults would. And sometimes they pretend they don't hear me. It's really funny. So you ask them again and again. You can definitely hear me. But they think, no, I need to sit because you are drawing me and I'm a good... child, and I've been told actually by mummy or daddy, who sat me down here, to sit still
and not talk to strangers as well.
Talk to that lady.
So have you seen where the portraits have ended up? Do they end up on people's walls or places?
There was a Henning at my old studio. He said, I was walking past somewhere in Totterdown somewhere the other day, and I saw your portrait up on someone's wall. I often say to people, look, there's your portraits for your downstairs loom, and they always say, we haven't got a downstairs we live in a flat. But yeah, I'd love to see some art. You know, it's a place for that to go, in a funny little place in your house. But people have put them up their staircases, you know, singly, and made them like a triad. And is that what you call them? Triad, triptychs, is that what they call it? It's always made my heart very big. If someone's bought a bit of your artwork and then you have it in your main place where you sit every day, I mean, there isn't a better compliment, I don't believe. So even these rubbish portraits are finding their way into frames. So
brilliant. I love it. And obviously it's still something that you're continuing doing as well, because you invested in a new booth recently, didn't you?
Yes. So I had a wooden one before, and now this is made out of slightly different materials, a little bit lighter weight. I had it all kind of vinyled on, which was really pleasurable to watch and everything. And then everything folds down into my little car. So yeah, it's a lot more sustainable, not in the kind of saving the world way, but the wood was getting a bit ropey.
So you only do rubbish portraits, do you?
Yeah, so I work as a commercial illustrator as well, but this really has taken over, and it's almost like I don't have the headspace to be doing both. And then I also have a little part-time job, and that's complete something I really like to stick to, and it's quite interesting why I want that as well. It's because I don't want to actually become like a weird wedding supplier, someone who, you know, a lady in a box just turns up every Saturday. All you're seeing is other sort of, well, general public, which is fantastic, only for 3 minutes of my time, and then, you know, in background, you know, and everything else that comes with a small business. And I actually find that quite, it doesn't sit that well with me. I like mundane. I'm a big fan of ironing. I'm a bit weird. I need that structure as well. And also, if you've got a part-time job for a couple of days a week, if that's temping, I'd like a bit of administration work. It then structures my entire week as well. But not only that, of course, it gives me a base and a bread and butter of income, because I am completely on my own financially with my daughter. So, you know, I need a certain amount. So naturally that brings my anxiety levels to zero. And if I'm creating something for IKEA, I don't create for IKEA, I might bash something out on my iPad, which then IKEA might get to look at. Then I've created that without thinking, crikey, this has got to work, this next thing's got to work. I hope someone changes that, because it changes my whole line really to, and my ideas are just affected because you think you've got to work. It panics me. I've got to this point where not too much is worrying me.
That's great.
And also financially, you know, you are meeting people, and it is tiring as well.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be doing it. You know, I'm not going to be like your next wedding photographer. I'm not going to be doing 45 weddings a year or events. And then they have to come back and edit it all, right? And once I'm packed up, I'm done. So, yeah.
You must get through a lot of marker pens.
So I use a variety of pens from Cass Arts, obviously, and Indian ink, which is really nice and opaque. So I've got, a store of inks I can see now, all the... because I like to use a new pot every time, because it can get a little bit watered down. So yeah, I'm actually painting. So I'm not really, I'm drawing with a paintbrush.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
How do you sustain those energy levels then when you're in that booth for a long time? How long are you there? For about an hour, and you're doing 3 minute portraits continuously. That must be really tiring.
Yeah, it is. This is a massively intense amount of work for a relatively small amount of time. Right. So yeah, I have to, my number one is to keep fit and healthy. You know, I'm moving this little booth around in and out of big places, and I'm driving a lot. You know, my driving levels have, you know, I've doubled my risk in my illustrator's life. You know, I'm out on the road. So that is number one, because it is just me. You know, no one else is looking after me. It's the hardest part of it. So nice and fit and healthy, not overdoing it. Saying yes to too much, which is hard, because, you know, there's money to be made, but I realize I can't as well. I just want to be comfortable. And then, so I've just got into Red Bull. It's really good, the sugar-free one.
not the answer I was expecting.
Yeah, I really like that. I like the big bottles as well. And I dropped one in my car the other day. It stank the whole car out. It's disgusting stuff. But yeah, if I'm packing up late, yeah, plenty of water, and I'm away. And then I'm buzzing. You know, I've just met, you know, my job is like speed dating. I have just met 65 people and have little chats with them for 3 minutes. And I have to decompress all that and say, what did he say? And who was that? Oh, I can't remember. And you know what? People go, you must write it down. You remember that? Yeah, you must. I'm like, I can't stop and do this. This is intense. You just hope that people get in touch with you. I do time lapses over my shoulder, and if there is that, you know, make it clear that they're not being videoed. But that makes a really nice bit of content, and it's nice for couples to be seeing that.
How do you find it, having to meet so many people in so short a space of time? Because I know so many artists are introverted and would probably freak out at meeting that many people. I am an introvert, but I know I can meet people by kind of almost gearing myself up for it. I just wondered how you kind of deal with having to meet that many people, and, you know.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. I'm not introverted. I'm all guns blazing. Meeting people gives me so much energy. Yeah, I've always loved it. So yeah, for me, being a commercial illustrator, working from home, being on your, yeah, it just bores me to death, really. I need to be around people. And that's why I like my little administrative job, because I'm around normality, around hardworking people. And yeah, no, I love meeting people. It makes me electric. Yeah. So it's really nice. I found me this little niche, like you say, because I'm a people person, but also I like listening. I try and do a bit more listening than talking. People fire questions at me. I have to, you know, because I'm drawing and talking. I believe it's a little bit like a skill of singing and playing guitar, more of which I can do without you knowing it. But people want to talk about themselves, don't they? And I love listening to it's a bit like a hairdresser's role as well. You know, straight away people fill the silence, and they probably tell you their biggest secrets in 3 minutes as well. It's fascinating. Not that I'm creating a silence, but I'm looking down and up quickly, and they're just like, well, this is fun. And they, you know, they think about what they can, yeah, tell me. I love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah.
Do you think it's because it feels like a confessional booth and that people feel compelled to tell you their secrets?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because there's that curtain there. It's like nothing else, isn't it? I don't know when we come across that kind of situation. We don't really. No, it's interesting. People want to tell you stuff unexpectedly.
I just love the way that you've created this whole thing that works for you perfectly, fits around your personality type, even though, you know, you wanted to do art. And normally, like you say, being a commercial artist will be sitting in a room on your own. So it's just brilliant. You've always been an artist. When did you decide to become an artist? Were you creating artwork as a child?
Very much, yes. Yeah. So my daughter's the same now. We're the same little people. It was either my doll's house playing with my people, my little miniature people, or it was, you know, copying Disney. And yeah, mum would say, what are you doing, Leroy? I'd say, yeah, busy. Yeah, busy doing something. And yeah, it was part of my little, I was in control of my own world. I found it probably really mindful, not that I knew what that was even a thing. Mm. Being dyslexic, I think there's a lot of noise around me. You know, things were hard to follow at school, but if I had my pens and colouring, you know, I could shine in my own little world. So yeah, I think I got into it because generally wasn't good at anything else, probably. And then, yeah, really, I think back now, the structure of a school and being dyslexic is so hard for those children. And there are many children who would go undiagnosed. I was very privileged to find out at university. It wasn't until then. Yeah. So that's funny, isn't it, going through? I didn't know as a child. But I didn't think, I don't know, my dad's just always been so behind me and encouraging with the art. I remember him walking me into, we're thinking, right, where can we go on to do? So I had a hard time, A-levels, just managed two, you know, started at one college, really wasn't going very well. And then my sister helped me get back into the sixth form college. And then by that point, I'd missed sort of half the year. So they said, we'll just do two and do two really well. And that was art and communication. Interestingly, I loved communication.
That's interesting.
Interesting now. Yeah. So after that, right, what do you do now? Obviously, clearly she's all right at art. Where can we go to pursue that career? Dad would probably really like, oh God, she's never going to have any money. But we went to Kingston University, where I did my foundation. That was absolutely superb. It was really hard work, really intense, and got me going, really. But he helped me get that interview. It was quite tough to get into, you know, it was a well oversubscribed course. But we were like, how can we make an impact? And it was Dad's idea. I'd drawn this girly door, like Peter Blake's, my version of Peter Blake's girly door. And there was tyres stuck onto this door, and drawing big women. I loved it. And he said, right, let's walk in with that. So they called my name and she's like, yeah, she's coming. It's a little bit longer than she should have been. But Dad and I were, you know, walked into it, barely fitted into the tiny office, and our little faces were like, well, hello.
How big was it?
It was a door.
It was natural.
I bought a door. It's hard to get through the door.
And what did they say?
At least they'll remember me now. Do you know what I mean? I just can't remember what was said, but I remember them smiling and thinking, yeah, like that. Yeah, a bit different.
It was going to go two ways, wasn't it?
Exactly. But yeah, good. That's a great idea of Dad. Dad's full of good ideas. He's been, I think he actually encouraged me to do more of, come and do the booth, set it up and go that way. So it's hard piecing it all together, isn't it?
Don't your work, you know, that you sell, your normal artwork, your non-rubbish portraits work, I love the sense of humour in it and kind of literal quality. So you've got, for people who haven't seen it, you've got like this ice cream with a man's face and it's called Ice Cream Man. It's literally an ice cream man. Where did that come from? Because a lot of your artwork seems to have that same kind of quality.
Yeah, it's just wordplay. So I can break things down quite easily and see them for their literal state. I think as a dyslexic, that it gives me that ability to do that, find that humour in wordplay. Yeah, and it's quite innate within me, so I'm not finding it too, digging too deep. It's actually, there's not much that's there. I'm not a very deep person. So I just want to make people laugh, actually. Yeah, that probably is one of my main goals, because nothing should be taken too seriously, I don't think, in life, because we have so much serious stuff to go through and life's bloody hard work. So yeah, that's just my little light-hearted, plus it's dead colourful, should bring joy. I think my artwork sits quite nicely in a kind of adult's child's room. That's where it's been described before. Kind of, you know, it's not baby nursery, but it kind of, the adult can get the joke as much as the child can appreciate the little ice cream man.
The Simpsons of artwork.
Yeah. And yeah, I like swearing too.
So you've obviously carved out this little niche for yourself now and your business is going really well. What was the best piece of business advice you've ever been given?
Just to follow your gut, I think. My auntie did that really well. She would put administrators into the advertising world, and because of its time in the 80s, it was just mainly women. So it was a group of women running from a little basement office in Charlotte Street. I remember walking in there, and the vibes I'd get were these, you know, busy, funny women doing really well. And yeah, I think Auntie Maggie's just always followed her gut. So I remember just her being a good role model for all females, actually. She was good fun. Yeah.
Do you think that positive experience in business early on kind of made you think that you wanted to be in business on your own?
Absolutely. I couldn't see myself anywhere else, actually. Mum had a little part-time job in Marks and Sparks, and me and my sister actually worked there straight out of school. We were both bra advisors, and Dad was self-employed as a builder, so I watched him chaotically run his business. I was answering a phone. Do you remember these old phones? Hello, Sheridan Contractors. You know, it was, yeah, that's what you did when you grew up. You ran your own business. And, you know, I didn't really think any other way, really. That's a bit of a rebel, really. Although I like the mundanity of ironing, I find the structure of doing a job and working for someone you don't want to do. I mean, hats off to anyone who can sustain that, really, because I really wouldn't be able to do that.
But they wouldn't be able to do what you do either. So it's
perfect
for you, isn't it? We're obviously going through a really tough time right now as business owners and just as people. But it seems like we've been through tough times for the last few years, and we obviously had lockdown. How was lockdown for you, given that you have a business that is quite dependent on the wedding industry? Did you run Rubbish Portraits then, or did you run it after that?
So I set it up in 2019, March. Like I say, Hampstead, London. Yeah. So yeah, well, an entire year, actually. So then the lockdown came in March 2020. So I'd had that fantastic year. And I remember my friend saying, Lou, it's all going to stop. You know, your festivals, you're not going to be. I'm like, what? No, just complete denial. What? Shut up. And it did. It just went from everything to pretty much nothing. But because I'd only done it for a year, I had other things up my sleeve that, you know, I dived into the colourful artwork. IKEA, I've since taken on 4 prints. Other little things, yeah, I adapted. It was no kind of quite robust like that. And I also started working in a hospital, because that just seemed quite the right thing to do. So, yeah, and there was a couple of things that I'd been booked for festivals, which worked really well online. So they did so well. Even the craft festival, that was just fantastic. Their online festival, just phenomenal. And so people would sign up, and again, I could do my spreadsheets. That was nice. I like my little mundane. I could get it all organized. And I would, you know, check in with families and Zoom them on their sofa. They'd all been huggled up together and having a laugh. I'd draw them all, and then I'd post them out, and it worked really well. I'd sit in the booth, and I'd log in and out of these Zoom calls, and then they'd get their little delight in the post, which was working fantastically a couple of days later. So unfortunately, it just wasn't enough, and I couldn't shout about it that loudly. Yeah. I didn't know how. Yeah, it could have gone really, really well. It would have been something really awesome for people to do during lockdown, wouldn't it? But because I needed that income, it's like I couldn't. It stalled me, like I was saying earlier. You know, it freezes me into thinking, well, I'll just go and earn the money in hospital, and then I know where I am.
It makes you realise how important it is to have that visibility with your booth, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I drew some lovely brands, like Molton Brown. I did their Christmas party, and I also did their Made.com. Their beautiful team, their marketing team, in fact. Obviously being expert themselves, one of them said, I bet a lot of your work is word of mouth, isn't it? And I went, you know what, Lauren? Yeah, it really is. Yeah, you're quite right. It is, because I'm hitting a wedding where there's 120 people. I'll be drawing half of them, but there's definitely a conversation to be had, wouldn't there? And people say, why do you call it rubbish? And I was like, well, you will remember me now, won't you? Because it's a name, it's a bit catchy, you know. So yeah, it does rely. It's just amazing how things, yeah, just even if it's up on their wall, then people say, oh, that's done by, and people want a little bit of it, don't they? Plus I'm on some great visibility wedding websites, like the Unwedding. I'm a massive fan of just that. She's given me some brilliant, you know, amount of referrals. It's such a cool platform, and she makes me visible, and everyone else on there is doing something, you know, really quite different, non-traditional pliers for weddings. But then when a corporate company are putting together their fun wedding, they're looking at that platform as well. And I think obviously she knows that. That's really good, because it spices things up for me a bit. I'm not just solely wedding.
And it just goes to show, I think, what can happen when you are somebody that does something a little bit different. It's like you're not quite in your normal box. So Lucy Sheridan, artist, is almost in the wedding box, which normally it's like florists and photographers, and it's different and it stands out, and that's what is going to get you noticed. I've always found whenever I've done something and been the person that stood out, did better. I used to work in France years ago as an entertainer, and I was the English girl amongst a team of 17 people that were mostly French, so I stood out.
What were you doing
in shows?
Was
a stage performer, yeah, so I danced and sang and did crazy English things on a campsite with 16 other mostly French people, a couple of Dutch people. And I was the English girl, so I always stood out, you know, and so I was the novelty. So I think when you're the novelty, there's great power in that. And also when I went to work in the corporate world, when I first got there, I was the journalist, because I'd come from the BBC. I was a journalist at the BBC, and I'd moved to the corporate world, and I was the novelty again. So I was, you know, asked to do things. And it's, I think when you're the novelty in somewhere, you get the opportunities and you get the people talking about you and you get the buzz.
Yeah. And you know what I hate? People putting people in boxes. You know, society, and because I was thinking about this the other day, I don't suffer from social status anxiety, because, you know, where are you working in that company? And people try and work out your how much you're earning, and then what size house you've got. Oh, can't. It makes me, when they meet you for the first time, this is anywhere, we just go, what do you do? Oh, can we not talk about something else? What do we do for a job? Why does it matter? I know it's a good opening line, but it annoy me, you know. So yeah, people love to put people in boxes and configure it all. And then what I like doing is breaking them down and going, yeah, but here I am. I don't like boxes anyway. Yeah, I'm sitting in one.
So what would be your first question that you'd ask when you meet somebody, then, instead of asking what they do, what should people say?
I don't ask questions. Okay. Probably drop some small talk, or you know, I'll talk about the environment, or not the weather, obviously. Yeah, it's a bit like the conversation in the booth. You know, you'd think I'd have quite a few things up my sleeve, you know, opening lines. No, I don't. It's all just, you know, on the ball, just off the cuff. I love all that. Not that I think of myself as a comedian, but I love watching ad-libbing comedy, and that just gets me going. That, you know, it's alive, it's just nonsense. It's, again, it's not taking anything too seriously, living in the moment and then moving on, really. But it works great for marketing, yeah.
Yeah.
Bubble box.
Yeah. Novelty every time.
Novelty. So, niche is good.
Yeah, definitely. So what would be your best tip then for artists starting out who are, you know, I don't know, the one artist in a sea of artists and want to make a name for themselves and make a living from their art?
I think be you. and be you, you know, as much 10 times over. It just, yeah, always stay true to yourself. And also, I remember people going, again, trying to work out, so do you do this full time? Do you still full time? They're like, are you judging how successful I am? Because if I'm doing rubbish portraits full time, wow, she's doing well, isn't she? So a bit of people say, what's your proper job as well? Like, well, this is it, isn't it? It's weird, isn't it? And throw it back on them and go, you've made yourself look stupid because I'm not pretty stupid about this. So I think a part-time job, if you're like me and you are, you know, you cannot create for fear of money, then go and get yourself a nice little part-time job. And you know what? You'll work twice as hard, 10 times as hard, because you will suddenly have half the amount of time. And you think, God, I don't want to be doing this boring job. I want to be doing what I'm doing, you know, and you might want to be doing your thing full time. I don't. I still like my little, it keeps me safe. I don't know what's happening economically. I might be either locked out, you know. I know that I've got nothing really to worry about other than my health and the people around me. Yeah, I gave a talk back at my university once, and remember the feedback that was like, oh, no, people don't encourage part-time jobs. It's like, why the hell not? You know, if you're starting out from uni, then how are you going to survive? You can't just rely on it, or can you think that things are going to cut? You've got to work hard for it. Things are going to take time. They did for me. So, yeah, a little side hustle.
But there is almost this stigma, like you say, of having a part-time job. That's, it's okay if it's something interesting or you've got lots of things going on. But to say that you have, I don't know, a job, like it's just a normal job.
A really mundane one.
Yeah, it's that's quite a stigma to it. But
yeah, I know. Again, it's down to the boxes, Victoria. Society's boxes.
Is it people scared of failure? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, we're going to embrace a part-time job. Go and be a waitress or administrator.
Oh, God. Waitressing. I've said to my daughter, you will definitely be doing some waitressing in your lifetime. It's being subservient as well. You know, it's a really good skill to learn, right? To be the underdog, you learn so much about yourself and others, you know, and you make some great cash tips. Oh, and it keeps you really fit. I was so slim when I was working at ZV's up in Clifton, still running around with my massive pizzas and plates, tripping upstairs, and oh, it's terrible. No, then I got quite good at it. It's really hard work, multitasking.
What's next for you and your artwork and rubbish portraits then?
Well, beginning of all of this, I thought, right, let's franchise it. Let's get a fleet of booths and get other people involved. Go for it. Yeah. And then it took me the lockdown to calm down and go, no, you know what, niche is really good. There's only one of you. You're going to, and I, you know, I'd hate to be organising people and logistics. That would bore the death out of me. So, but now I sort of come full circle and people are asking me if they could have a bit of rubbish portraits abroad. And I'm thinking maybe I could make that happen. So, yeah, exciting.
That's exciting. Yeah, I think it could be, gosh, could have portraits from all over the place. And you could request different styles depending on who the portrait artist is.
Exciting. I know, who will those people be and what, yeah. So, yeah, very early stages, but I'm trying to gather all my info. And it is hard, isn't it? Because no one's on your team and, that, you know, some of these are just to stay where you are, but no, I'll get on and find people that want to be on my team.
Yeah, and it can be amazing. I mean, I've not got a team myself, but I can imagine having a team around you, just kind of, that can be so powerful.
Yes, always have the right people, isn't it? Yeah, and believe me, I've met quite a few of those right people on the name, so they're not going to be hard to find. It's just time and cash, isn't it, as well? Yeah.
I'm so excited for you. Where can people find you if they want to have their very own rubbish portrait, or they want to just chat to you about your business? How can they find you?
So I have a website, rubbishportraits.com. And then I'm quite active on Instagram at rubbishportraits. I do quite a bit of, I talk to camera, Victoria, do that quite a bit. Yeah. I love a bit of an impromptu car park chat in the car. And yeah, so you get to know a bit more of me.
Brilliant. I love it, impromptu car park chat. I think I'm going to try myself.
Yeah, so I'm on that. And then you can make an inquiry through my, you know, inquiry forms if you'd like to book me for any kind of events. I don't do kids' parties, but I do every other kind of party.
Thank you so much, Lucy.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to Creative Slurp. I hope it's inspired you to try something new in your business. If you loved it, please take the time to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you soon, and go and chase your biggest creative business dreams. You can do it.